Sometimes it's having a really firm understanding of your target audience and what their pain points and challenges are and speaking to those in a relaxed environment, like a dinner. And so it's not always this sort of like bottom line, super measurable, 100% attribution endeavor. Sometimes it's like creating a vibe.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan Gandolf, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus, where I'm thrilled to be joined today by a recurring guest. We've only had a handful of these, and you know the first episode's good. I encourage you to go back and listen to it, but you know the first episode's good because you get the invite back. So I'm thrilled to be joined today by Senior Integrated Marketing Manager from Trust Radius, Christy Gamboni, who honestly I've had the pleasure of not only hosting on the podcast, but collaborating with on several projects. We're going to dig into some of those today. You know they're a good partner when they really feel like an extension of your team. It's been a ton of fun to collaborate with Christy, and I'm excited to host her today. So I'll stop there, stop rambling. Christy, in your own words, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your role at Trust Radius.
Okay, well, thank you first and foremost. I really appreciate coming on again. I feel like one of those repeat SNL stars.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm a senior integrated marketing manager at Trust Radius. I manage our go-to-market, everything from our email strategy to social to in-person events, which we'll discuss more here. But yeah, a little bit of everything. And we're a very savvy, fast-paced team, so we do a lot. So there's a lot of great things to report on and a lot of things to be involved in.
You mentioned reporting. The Trust Radius team, better than anybody we've worked with, in your content and I think in your partnerships, like actually reports on what's happening with real data as opposed to just saying, oh, it was good, it was bad, kind of anecdotally. So really love that. And kudos to you and the team. We're going to dig into some of that data in one of those projects today. But Christy, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. So before we do that, I have to ask you, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
I am really into old fashions, but they have to be like slightly sweet. So maybe like a dehydrated orange slice, you know, maybe a flavored bitters. I don't know.
I love that. I'm an old fashioned fan. I'm actually not, a lot of people like old fashions with rye bourbon. I'm not a big rye fan because the bourbon I think is a touch sweeter. I'm actually enjoying a Japanese bourbon that a specific partner sent my way as a thank you for some collaboration. So kudos to you and the team, and thank you for that, for expanding my bourbon horizons.
Yeah, well, that was actually a recommendation from our CMO, Allison.
Christy, we had really honestly the pleasure of collaborating with your team on an executive dinner series and market that your team had kind of built and then was looking for co-sponsors. We did three of the events. Honestly, wish we could have done more just because they were so successful and your team made it so easy. I've used a line and I'll keep using it that I think, you know, even in this era of AI and all the digital tools at our fingertips, I think breaking bread is still the best marketing strategy. I just don't think there's anything better than sitting down with like minds, differing minds, and literally sharing a meal together. Your team did a fantastic job of executing these events. So maybe let's just start there and tell us a little bit about the dinner series, and then we can kind of get into some advice for marketers running these dinner series.
Okay. Yeah. So we did a 6 dinner series over the course of 8 months. And so that was almost a dinner a month. It was very intense, but we found that having a, you know, a strategy where we're spread out over the US gives us ample opportunity to invite people from literally everywhere. And with each dinner, we had a different sort of strategy. The last three, we obviously co-sponsored with you. The ones prior to that, we co-sponsored with other vendors, and each dinner had its own unique sort of like flavor and twist, theme, if you will, cuisine style. And they were all varied. But towards the end of the series, we had people asking us, emailing us, asking if we were coming to their city or not. So definitely going to do it again. But I have some great stats to share today about the effect of those dinners as it pertains to Trust Radius, which we'll get into.
Love that. Before we jump into the kind of the results, I want to dig in a little bit to the process, because you guys made this so easy on your partners. It was really incredible. I felt like all we had to do was show up and enjoy a delicious dinner. How did you first pick the markets that you wanted to go to for the series?
So we actually came up with the markets based off of like our personal gain, obviously. So where most of our prospects or customers were located. We tried to pick major cities, specifically ones that had customer prospect accounts headquartered there, assuming that a good majority of their employees would be local. That's not always the case, but yeah. It also helps you break into like new contacts or leads at those accounts that you otherwise wouldn't have known because they live there. So that was how we chose the locations. There's more locations we want to do, honestly, spanning even into Canada. So yeah, it's just all based off of what would benefit you most or how you can get in front of your customers, which is part of the strategy too, is it's not just for prospecting. It's for that face time with customers as well.
I think that's so, so important is like, there's such a relationship aspect to any kind of vendor relationship. And I think we as marketers sometimes like over index on new business, top of funnel. And I think there's like dinners represent a really interesting opportunity to look at existing pipeline. I think that's always really critical. Like you can accelerate deals or you can make sure you get the right person in the room. And then also the customer relationship I think is so, so important. So you guys pitched some good markets and then you picked some really good restaurants. I think that's also important to what you all did. Like you mentioned, like you all were kind of selfish with it, which I think you should be, but I think a big part of dinners, and we felt this ourselves in dinners we've done independently and with others, like don't skimp on the place that you go to. I think like it's so hard in this work from home environment to literally get people to, this sounds crazy, but put on nice clothes and leave their house, right? Like we can all work from home comfortably. You really have to entice them to do that. I remember the dinner we hosted with you all hosted, we participated in San Francisco. I went out a day or two early and met with some other folks in market. And I kept telling them where we were doing this dinner. And they're like, oh, that's one of the best spots in the city. And it works, right? That room was packed with the right people.
Yeah, it's all about the venue. So, you know that one restaurant in your town that you've like always wanted to go to? Like maybe it's a place you would go with your wife for an anniversary or something, or you're just kind of holding out until there's the right time. That's the venue you want to secure for your people. So a place that they want to go that they otherwise wouldn't take themselves or don't have time necessarily to go to, or it's like in the middle of the city and most people live on the outskirts of the city, you know, it gives them an opportunity to come into the city. And you can make that easy for them too. But we do like Uber credits for our attendees. Because, you know, you're also encouraging people to drink. So giving them that sort of out, like that, you know,
yeah.
Mommy's night out, daddy's night out or whatever, it lessens the barrier to entry for them to be able to come. But you also don't feel bad like pushing wine on them and, you know, having a sommelier present and talking through the various wine choices. And it creates a much more relaxed environment where people don't feel like they have to like leave early or, you know, so it's all about the venue. It's all about the vibe. It's all about the environment. And with that being said, it's also about the cuisine. So if the chef of that kitchen is Michelin star rated, promote that. If the yeah. cuisine is, you know, something, something flair with a something, something style, like promote that because yeah. those are things that are very attractive about, dinners, especially nice ones like these. People want to know the type of food, the wine list, even, is it handpicked by a sommelier that works there? Like that's very interesting. People want to know that. So it's all about the venue. It's all about the cuisine and just promoting that information up front and getting people excited about the venue.
The venues were, I would assume, slightly more expensive than what you could have done, right? But I think the return shows up in the type of people you can attract to that event and then the actual results, which we will get to. I keep teasing them in just a moment. Two other things I want to give your team kudos to, and I think other marketers can learn from. One, the actual invite process. You guys were on top of this 4-6 weeks out in advance. It was scarce, you know, because of the venues we were selecting. You know, there's 20, 25 seats, maybe up to 30 seats at some of the venues, but it was kind of a free-for-all, which I actually really liked. You know, I've been a part of other events where it's like, hey, Audience Plus, you have to get 10 people there. These are your 10 spots. Hey, other partner, like, y'all are just kind of like, we've got 30, like, everybody go fill it up and may the best person win it. That worked for us because it kind of drove urgency on our side of like, hey, we got to get this into our workflow and get our invites out and make sure we get the right people in the room. You know, I don't know if that's intentional or not, but I think that was, that's something I think for marketers to think about as they plan this is like, one, make sure you're 4-6 weeks out in advance, knowing some people won't commit till 2 weeks in advance. And I kind of liked the free-for-all nature of it. The other thing, and this is, I think, a good segue into the results, is these were not like lunch and learns. I know they were dinner, but these were not like lunch and learn, like thinly veiled pitches. There were no slides. There were no brochures handled out. Like, it was genuinely like, let's introduce ourselves. We'll give the, you know, high level overview for the host. And then we're going to just enjoy dinner at our table talking about topics that we all care about. I've always said, like, I hate overprogrammed dinners, but if you get the right people in the room and you put them at a table together, inevitably they're going to talk about their shared experiences, which in this environment is work, right? We're all marketers. We're all go-to-market leaders. We're going to talk about these results and I'll let you speak to them, but you all got these results without selling at all. Like, genuinely, there was no selling inside of that room. And so let's maybe, with that as the backdrop to this, do you want to share some of the results you all saw from this dinner series?
I do. And I also want to piggyback off of your comment about the way we broke down the invite list. So yeah, that was a strategy because we did plan for attrition of people registering and then no shows, obviously. I can report that we actually had the opposite problem where more people came than we thought would come. And we were like shifting tables around, adding chairs, having standing room only. Like, it was insane. But yeah, the strategy was get as many people as registered as possible up to, you know, that 30% attrition rate. And then we'll make sense of it from there. But also make sure that your sponsors or your vendors that you partner with, that you share a similar ICP, that you're going after a similar audience. Because what ends up happening is you mutually benefit from the people that they're bringing there. I don't know if you feel the same way, but there were times that you brought people. We were like, oh my God, like, we're so happy Jonathan was able to get them there. One of them for us was a customer. And another one was a former customer. So making sure that the sponsors that you pick and the vendors that you work with are strategic and that you guys share that similar audience is super important. It'll benefit you in the long run. And then not putting too much pressure on the sponsors. It makes them want to come back for more. It makes them want to partner with you again. There's also, you know, some people have more capabilities to get people in audience than others. Some people have like conflicting things going on. It's important to be like super flexible. But it is in that approach, it is kind of like a early bird gets the worm kind of situation. But as long as you give everybody the same access and same ability, the same timeline to get people there, then it's fair, you know? So I've been in similar situations where it's like, okay, Trist Radius, you get like 3 headcount or 5 to 7, and you're like, what is 5 to 7? Is that like half a person? Like, I don't know. So it's, yeah, just take some of the complexity out of it and create openness with your sponsors. I know like me and you and some others had like a Slack thread going, like it can be super casual. Like, did you invite so-and-so or yeah, did you invite so, you know, so keeping it super casual and fun makes the process a lot easier for everyone involved.
That partner selection is so important because you're like, what it meant is because our alignment was so tight on who we wanted in the room, we didn't have to worry about like double checking an invite list or double checking a, like, you know, we're going to contact this person. You're going to like, it was just like, hey, they're all probably the same people. Whoever can get them in the room, the better. And it worked out. Just like you said, we had a lot of shared kind of interconnectivity between customer bases, prospect bases, et cetera. And just the rising tide raises all boats in that instance.
Exactly. Yep. And I'll be happy to report doing it this way, not having like set seats or headcounts for people or not demanding that X sponsor gets their people in. It worked out for us and I have some great results to share. So from the 6 dinners, we had anywhere from 2 to 4 sponsors per dinner. I will share some of the costs with you because I know that's important for companies that are scaling. So at each dinner, we didn't want to exceed $3,000 to $5,000 per sponsor. And that was for a 20 to 30 headcount at a really nice venue. So it is possible to make these dinners economical. But I will share some of our results. So of the full attendee list from those 6 dinners, we had 18% are in a current sales cycle with us, which I'm happy to report, which is a lot. You know, attribution is tricky. So I can't say for certain like how the dinners influence that. What it is kind of sort of that causal attribution where it's like, you know, it only helped, you know. So of that 18%, 81% were renewals for us and 19% were net new. So those are great stats. Of the full attendee list, I will tell you that 50% were in our ICP. So regardless of, you know, the target audience you're going after or target audience I'm going after or other sponsors, some are more mid-market, some are more small business, some are more enterprise. It ended up shaking out in our favor that 50% of there are in our ICP people we target. There were 26 customers of ours that attended the dinners, which is 15% of all attendees. which is huge. Like we said earlier, like making sure you're dedicating face time with your customers is important. With that being said, it's not just the dinner. So if you're flying your CMO and your CRO out to this location, make the most use of their time. Have them do some customer stops, you know, bring some donuts to an office, set up a coffee chat with a CMO that can't make dinner that night because their kids, you know, rehearsal, whatever is happening. Make the most use of those executives' time there and plan it for them. If they can't plan it, plan for them. Like, hey, one of our customers would love to meet with you, but they can't come to the dinner. Can you stop by and bring some, you know, donuts to their office? Like, make the most use of everyone's time there. And then our last stat is a happy one, but not so happy. So we had 8 win-back opportunities as a result of these dinners. So like I said earlier, one of the people you got there was a former customer of ours. So having that blended sort of invite ability gave us opportunity to get FaceTime with people that maybe wouldn't have come. So those are some great stats for us as a result of the dinners.
I have a feeling some of these metrics are just starting, right? Like, we will all be feeling the impact of this for months, maybe even years to come based on some of the relationships. So kudos to your team on the execution of it. And I think you're exactly right. Like, if you're going through the effort to spin up an event and not your home market, like, go out a day early or at least the day of and like spend time in market. That was really valuable for us in each of the markets we collaborated in as well. So for Trust Radius, you know, this is not your first rodeo or your first dinner explicitly, but I'm guessing we have some watchers and listeners of this episode who they love this strategy, but they've got to kind of build a business case internally. You've just shared a lot of great kind of ammunition for that. But what would you say is like the one thing that a marketer who's maybe sitting here listening to this saying, I really need to get my business bought into this. What's the one piece of advice you maybe have to help them get started with that?
So you definitely want that executive buy-in because those are ultimately people you're going to be sending to these dinners. You want to keep the dinners senior level. We had a few instances where we like let some directors come and we found that they really just couldn't contribute at the level of the conversation that we wanted them to. There's just some pain points, some challenges, some needs that a director and below just can't speak to. And when you're having conversations around like go-to-market alignment and you have CROs and CMOs at the table, it's really important that everybody speaks the same language, and that means that your own CMO, CRO needs to come to the dinner. So getting that executive buy-in is super important because ultimately you're going to be shipping them all across the U.S., which is what I felt like I was doing. I'm sure you have another dinner in you. I feel bad. But it's definitely important to get their buy-in, and you will. With numbers like these and just, you know, if you put together your lists, if you have a good idea, if you can use tools like Zoom Info or LinkedIn Navigator to create your list and say, look, like 20% of our customer base is based in Austin. We have to do a dinner in Austin. Let us just try, you know, even try one dinner first and see if you can get a taste for how they perform for you. We did that with Chicago. Chicago was a little bit of a bust for us. I'm just being honest. It kind of opened our eyes like how important the location is. You can't just pick a location and hope for the best. It really has to be aligned to your target customer and prospect audience.
I should have mentioned this earlier, but you mentioned the executive buy-in internally. We, and really you all, actually, like, we turned away people who weren't at that level but wanted to join the dinner, right? And I think that's, like, that's a very uncomfortable thing to do and very, like, I don't know, maybe, like, against the grain thing to do. It's a lot of times we as marketers are like, oh, the more the merrier, but it's like, no, like, this is truly an executive dinner. Like, if you're not at this level, like, sorry, we'll do something else probably later at a date. But how did your team like respectfully and cordially like decline people who wanted to be at the event?
Yeah, so that's the hard part, right? So like we had some fractionals that registered. We had some consultants register. And we really didn't want those type of people there because, you know, we had such a narrow audience, targeted audience that we were all focused on. And so there were cases where we were honest, or there were cases where we said, you're on the wait list and we'll notify you if a spot opens up. And that was the truth because in most cases, we had more people registered than we could accommodate. I think about 3 or 4 times we opened a seat up for someone because a seat was available and they wanted to come. But we were very strategic about, you know, making sure that they could contribute to the conversation and they weren't there to prospect themselves. You know, trying to sell to CMRs, CMOs and CROs at the table. We don't want that. We wanted a relaxed environment. And so you have to be strategic about who you let there. With that being said, people who are in between jobs are not necessarily, they shouldn't be a no because you don't know which account they could be heading to and how that could benefit you. And if you know the person closely, you may be able to, you know, sniff out some of that information. We had at one of our dinners, a CMO that left a company was in between jobs. And I remember asking Allison, my boss, like, you know, should he still come? I don't know. And she was like, put him on the list, put him on the list. And sure enough, he ended up going to an account that we was on our ICP, was on our list. We didn't know a single person there. We hadn't had any contact with, and started his job at the new place right before the dinner started. So it was like, it couldn't have been a better, you know, situation. So don't rule those people out. If you feel close enough to talk to them and kind of understand their situation, I would do that.
This is all so good. I love how tactical this is. Kristy, I really appreciate you kind of sharing behind the scenes on the plan and the results. I would encourage everybody to like really think about this. I think we as marketers, we're used to spending, you know, five figures, six figures on sponsorships and paid channels. Like, I think there's also some psychology to this. You mentioned like go to a restaurant where you'd celebrate your anniversary or a birthday. And it's like, you know, maybe it's a couple hundred bucks for a couple, and then you see a dinner bill for $3,000 or $4,000, and you're like, oh man, that's so much. But when you like, when you stack rank it across the other marketing initiatives and you have results, like you shared, like the ROI is there. And it's just such a good experience. So Kristy, thanks for sharing all of that. We always end these conversations. I have to ask, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
My super unpopular, probably hated opinion is that it's hard. Like, that's super hard. Like, we have all these like metrics and things, but like a lot of it is, like you said, like psychology, you know, attribution is important, but sometimes it's, you know, a vibe. Sometimes it's brand awareness, which isn't always measurable. It's sometimes it's having a really firm understanding of your target audience and what their pain points and challenges are and speaking to those in a relaxed environment, like a dinner. And so it's not always this sort of like bottom line, super measurable, 100% attribution endeavor. Sometimes it's like creating a vibe and being able to articulate the importance of that and get that executive buy-in is hard. But marketing is hard. It's tough, right? But I wouldn't say that it's this super complex, formulaic, you know, Goodwill Hunting chalkboard problem. You know, it's if you have the right people on your marketing team that like truly understand your customers, it can be fun and easy.
I love that. Marketing should be fun. Yeah. You all and the team certainly created good vibes at the dinner series. This episode's been a good vibe. Thanks again for sharing everything behind the scenes and all of the results. Kristy, if people want to learn more about Trust Radius or learn more from you, what's the best way to do that?
TrustRadius.com.
We'll get that link in the show notes. I'd encourage everybody to go check out Trust Radius or partner with them, although we call dibs, first dibs on any future partnerships. We've got a shared report on demand generation coming out, so be sure to check that out as well. Kristy and her team have done an awesome job. So to all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining another episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. Until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.